Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Norwich Playhouse. Please welcome a man who's been taking some nose cocaines before the show to find out what all the fuss is about. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello, Norwich. Oh, God, you're much better than last week's audience. So welcome to the show. Lovely to be here. Thank you for having me. I haven't really taken any nose cocaine. It's not for a while. Welcome to Richard Herring. Richard Herring's Lowest Off Smelliest Todgers podcast. We found the people with the smelliest penises in Lowest Off. Imagine how bad that's going to be. It's like Naked Attraction, but it's sort of nose-based, nasal, smell-o-vision. Though I was hanging around with some 12-year-olds from Costi, smashing up some pumpkins some little kids had made. They were 11 years old, so they call it Rahalastapa because they're cool. So they're very cool. The other big news story from the Norwich Evening News, is my favourite paper. I read it even when I'm not in Norwich. That's how good it is. The advertising board the size of 2 elephants outside Chantry Place has been rejected. That's the good news. They were very concerned about it. They were going to put a 23-foot advertising screen up there. The Evening News are very keen on saying what it's as big as. It's as big as 2 African elephants, which are 12 feet each. It's actually 1 foot bigger than 2 African elephants. Maybe one of them's got his trunk up. It dwarfs a giraffe. Well, a giraffe's only 18 feet high. Imagine that. So that's how big this thing was. Just so you've got an idea, they're using safari-based animals because that's what Norwich... That's what... Then, just in case you don't understand, it's a double-decker. It's bigger than a double-decker bus, which is only 14 feet. So it's almost...
It's 1¾ double deckers. I'd have said a triple decker probably. They could have gone for. Or if you want to put it another way, it's over 4 Richard Herrings high. That is how it. Which suddenly doesn't seem so big, does it? When you put it like that. 4 little tiny Richard Herrings high. Oh, stick it up then. It's not as big as some elephants. I've got another Norwich fact for you. Famous people born in Norwich. John Tickle from Big Brother. That's it. That's the only one. That's the only one. John Tickle. But, you know, all those centuries, no one was born here who's famous. And then and then it's John Tickle. It's like, fucking hell. It was worth the wait. And it's like, he's the 20th century Jesus, as far as I'm concerned. So good to see him. Look, Rook, we have absolute. I'm so looking forward to this. Absolute fantastic guest for you this week. He's probably best known. I don't know if I've done one for him. Best known. Well, I'm going to risk this one, and it's a risk because we're going to have to talk about it. As the Black Hand in Sooty. I mean, it's doubly bad, isn't it? It could be dear. He's been working a long time. You never know. Well, never know what that might be. Will you please welcome the incredible Joe Pasquale, ladies and gentlemen. Joe Pasquale. Absolute honour. Pick up the microphone. Hello.
Hello, everyone. All right? Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it?
It's very exciting.
I'm really genuinely excited. You know I was, because I was telling you, I'm a huge fan of the show. I call it a show because it's not, it's a podcast, but I listen to it all the time. If I'm driving to gigs, you put it on, if it's a long drive, and I get really excited. And when I get excited, I talk really fast, as you can tell. And then if I get really excited, I go even higher, which is really bad. The voice gets higher and higher. But I put it on the car, and you'll have like 4 or 5 hours on the row. So I'm very excited, really chuffed up, because you have some really great people. And then you've got me, the Black Hen from Sooty.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I'm genuinely honoured to be here. It's a lovely show, and I love doing it.
Well, so I'm equally honoured to have you, Joe. You've done. You have an absolutely amazing career. As I say, like this a lot. When you actually go back and look at, especially with someone who's been going as long as you have, which is a very long time, and you were really a very young man when you started. Yeah. You were a boy when you started. Yeah. But and you look at the body of work; it's absolutely incredible. Not just Sooty.
No,
but mainly Sooty.
It was a great gig to do as well, though.
But first of all, before we get into that, I want to, because I have to ask you how you are. I know you're a quite accident-prone person in real life, you have had quite a bad, you had a quite an almost death.
It was. Accident. It could have died. It was just 8 stitches in the end, but it could have been really bad. I was gigging in Skegness in the summer. Okay. Right? Have you ever been to Skegness?
I don't believe I have.
Right, it's the land of the midnight sausage, I call it, because you can get a sausage at any time of night at Skegness, right? And I had a great big pair of moose antlers that I use in the act. And all it is I should go around saying, oh, these are really expensive. Guess how much? They're very dear. And this Inspector Moose. It's just a string of really shit jokes with it, right? And then what happened, I don't know why they do this, but you work in a theatre, at the end of the show, the curtains come in, and then they turn the lights off on the stage. And I never understood that. They do it every time, don't they?
Yeah.
Lights come on, but they leave all the house lights come on out there for you, but for us, and it's black, you can't see anything. And on the floor are these giant proper moose antlers, right? They're not like plastic things. And I said, I'd fall over everything. And I just turn around, and they're there. And I literally did, oh, there they go. And it was, you know when you fall over, and your balance just goes, and you're trying to get it back. It's just not going to happen, and it almost happens in slow motion, and these great big 8-pronged things are facing up at me like that, and I just knew I was going to die. I thought, oh shit, I'm going to die in Skegness on a pair of moose antlers, right? And this is true. And I'd literally just that week I'd seen the new Mission Impossible film, right? And you know when Tom Cruise, no, seriously, right? It's not a joke. He goes off the motorbike off the cliff and he's doing all these stunts. And he's the same age as me. I always think I'm the same age as Tom Cruise. If he can do that shit, so can I, right? So as these things, it was slow motion. It really was. I thought, I'm going to die in slow motion here. And the moose, right? And if they got in my chest here, I'll be dead with 8 prongs in me. Brilliant, right? What a way to die. And it'd be the comedian Joe Pasquale has died in Skegness with a moose. It'd be a brilliant headline, right? Anyway, so as I'm going down like that, don't ask me, I thought I'd just like channeled Tom Cruise and I twisted. Seriously, I twisted in midair, right? Yeah. And I landed in the middle of the horns, came out the other side. I thought, yes, great. But except for this leg here, this leg got pronged right in the back there, right? So I thought, oh shit, that really hurts, right? So I went to see the bloke on the sound desk, my mate Lee. I went, Lee, I think I've hurt my... No, as I go, I crashed down like that, right? And all the audience are going out by the curtain there. And they all went, what's that? And I stuck my head under, that was me. And they all laughed, right? So they go to see Lee, right, who's on the sand. I went, Lee, I think I've hurt my leg. He went, well, do you want me to look at it? He said, yes. So I dropped my trousers and he went, oh, shit. I went, well, he went, you need to see a medic. So he goes and gets the first aid bloke. He comes down, he looks at me and went, oh, my God, he was nearly fainting. I thought he was the first aid bloke. I said, what is it? He went, you've got a big hole in your leg. So I said, well, it doesn't hurt that much if you've got a big hole. So I said, right, well, what do I do? He said, you've got to go to A&E. I went, it's 11 o'clock in Skegness on Saturday night. Are you kidding? I'll be there for a week, right, just waiting. So you've got to go. I said, a big hole there. I can't do anything with that. So he said, where are you tomorrow? I said, Bridlington. He said, well, go to Bridlington in the morning. So that's what I did. I went to Bridlington, and it was one of the blokes that I'd met years and years ago when I was working for the CSE, Combined Service Entertainment, for the troops. And he was a medic in the Falklands that I'd met years ago. And he went, I know you. So I said, do you? He went, yeah, I saw you work about 30 years ago in the middle of the Falklands. So what are you doing here? I said, I've been stabbed by a moose in Skegness. And he went, yeah, sounds about right. So he said, well, let's have a look at it. So anyway, I'll show you. Do you want to see it? Got to see this
guy? Yeah, well, yeah, I guess. The moose hole, yeah. Okay. This is the first.
Look, Mitch, look at that. See?
Yeah.
And so basically... he gave me tetanus, 8 stitches, and said, you can go home and go and do your gig. So I went on Bridlington that night.
Yeah.
And then, so the next day, I saw in the news, he said, legendary comedian has near-death experience. I started reading it. I went, who's that then? It was me, right? No, I'd never called me legendary before. And if it had been stabbed by some bloke in Skegness, no one would have given a monkeys, right? But because it was a moose in Skegness, it made all the headlines. So it was,
Well, you know, not surprisingly, it's I'm glad you're alive.
Yeah.
But I sort of wish you'd died.
Yeah, I know.
Because it would have just been. I mean, in 30 years' time, 40 years' time, if you could fall on a moose head and die, that would be perfect.
If I'm going to go, I'd like to go like that. Yeah.
Would be. You know, that would take. That would no one would remember Tommy Cooper if you died like that.
If on a moose in Skegness, it'd be a fantastic way to go. If I could make one wish, that'd be it.
I'm very glad you're still here, Joe. But it's
you've got Rod Hull and Emu.
Yes, there's Rod Hull on the Rod Hull and Emu on my book. Yes, we might talk about them later. But look, I was really interested again. I didn't remember much about your real beginnings, and I was sort of surprised to see. You've done quite a few jobs before you were a comedian.
Oh, yeah, I did lots of jobs. What happened was... If you have to say to me, Joe, this is a boring story,
okay.
I'll stop it. Say, Joe, this is boring.
Okay.
Right? I will stop it, right?
Okay.
But I got run over when I was 13.
Yes.
Right? Seriously, what's your audience?
I'm very sorry about
that. I got run over, hit and run. Does that make it funnier? What's what it was? I did got run over, right? And I broke my leg really bad. And it was on the first day of a paper round, and I was on my chopper. Remember the chopper?
Can you show us the leg you broke?
I didn't show you because there's a bit of lump out of it, but I'll show you later, right? There's another story which I'll
I hope you haven't had any injuries with your banjo string. That's all I'm hoping.
Oh, I've got better stuff than that. Wait till we get to it. So, I got run over, right? And I lived in a council house then, and I was only 13, and there was a posh area as well. And everybody used to say that there was a big band, it was a duo, called Mac and Katie Cassoon. Do you remember them? Pop stars in the 70s, okay. Right? And they lived nearby. Everybody said, they lived nearby. So it won't be on the council estate, it'll be on the posh bit. Anyway, I get run over, and I'm out of it like this. And then I wake up, and then above me is Mac and Katie Cassoon. I'd seen them on top of the Pops a week beforehand, right? And I can't remember what something about sugar kisses or something. Sugar candy kisses, that was a big number, right? And I thought I was dead because Mac and Katie's Cassoon are there, right? And so I started singing Sugar Candy Kisses. I thought, I'm in heaven. And Mac and Katie Cassoon, I really fancied her as well, right? Anyway, then they went, no, stop singing. You're on the floor. So I went, oh, am I? And they went, yeah. And they called an ambulance for me. And it was really great that Mac and Katie Cassoon rescued me, right? Anyway, they take me to the hospital. They take me to hospital, and I didn't know how bad the leg was. And they put me in a room with all the really old blokes. You know, it was about 30, you know, in those days, in the early 70s, there was, the walls were massive, right? And there was really, really, really old people at death's door. And I was laying there like I was still out of it. And then the sister came along, and then all of a sudden, one bloke got out of his bed there, bloke got out of that bed there, and they held my hands. And I thought, oh, what's going on here? It worked out that my bone had slipped over like that. It was right up beyond the femur. So they'd gone over about an inch and a half, 2 inches like that. So she comes up to me, she puts a piece of wood, there's a wooden thing in my mouth. This is in the 70s, you know, it's like the dark ages then, right? Like, so I thought, and she went, just hold on to those men's hands. So I'm holding that, got a wooden ruler in my mouth, and I kid you not, she gets the butt of my ankle and she just pulls it like that, right, to try and set the bones. So I'm like, oh, shit. So it never worked anyway, trust me, it didn't work at all. So then they put me in traction with all the weights down the bottom, and then they said, oh, this isn't going to work, we're going to have to plaster your leg, try and get it out there, and try and stretch it down and plaster it. So I was 13, remember? So they take me down to this plastering room, and they've got a cutout of a human body there, right? And they lift you up and put you on this. And now I'm stark naked, right? Because the break is literally just here by my hip. And so I've got nothing. I'm 13 years old. And then the bloke comes up to me, so we've got some student nurses in today. Is that right? They come in. So I went, okay. So of course they're all girls, all ladies that come in, right? And I'm 13 and I'm real embarrassed, right? And then there's a little hole around the willy area here in the wooden thing that I'm lying on. So I'm just laying there like that, right? And I'm thinking, okay, what's going to happen there? Then out of nowhere, a wooden broom handle comes out of this hole, right? And just there, I'm 13, right? And I'm like, and all these girls are like, they'll start laughing. So I start crying then as well, right? And then, but being 13 as well, right, so he doesn't plaster my willy, right? He grabs hold of my willy and pulls it, right? He didn't have to pull it very far, but he pulls it and wedges it round the side so he doesn't plaster my willy. And at 13, just one touch and it woke up, right? I had a biff on, right? And all these girls are really laughing, and I'm crying with a biff on. And, oh, no, it really affected me quite badly, right? So they plaster me. Is it boring? Or shall I keep going with it? Shall I keep going? So they plaster me all the way up my leg, all the way around my waist here, right the way up to my chest here, because it was right there. And they didn't, obviously in the 70s, I don't think they was as advanced then. So they plastered my whole body. So the only thing that's not plastered there is this leg here and my arms and my shoulders. So anyway, I have all this physio. They teach me how to use crutches and all that sort of stuff. My mum and dad used to come and visit me. And then what I do, I try and sit on my trousers still undone. So what I try and do, I'd be on my crutches. I got really good on the crutches. Whoa, I got really quick. And what would happen, right? My mum and dad would come and visit me, and it was in Orsett Hospital in Essex, and they're a bit great. It was a new hospital. It was all glass, right? So I'd go and see my mum and dad off at the main reception bit there, and then I'd run as quickly as I could, right? Like that on me scratches, like that. And I'd get to the windows, and I'd start waving so I could see the car park was down below. And because I couldn't get any pants on or trousers, I had to wear my dad's pyjamas, old drawstring pyjamas, right? And they'd cut the legs, because I was only little then as well, so they'd cut the legs off the bottom. I looked like something had fallen off a bonfire. That's what I looked like, right? And I'd tie these things up, but there was no pants on because I couldn't have a poo on nothing on the toilet. I had to use a bedpan, and it was just a nightmare anyway. So anyway, I've seen them off at the door, and I'm going, whoa, 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 whoa. And I get to the window by the car park, I'm waving like that, and everybody's walking to their cars, looking up, and then everybody just stops pointing, right? And I thought, what are they all pointing at? What's that right? And then I see my mum and dad come around the corner waving like that, and they're going... I go, what? And everybody was going like that, laughing. And I looked out because I couldn't feel it. I'd loosened the drawstring, right? And the pyjama bottoms had come right down here, and you could see my winkle just sticking out the side there, right? And everybody's going, there's a kid up there with his willy out, right? And because I couldn't feel it, right? And all I've got is one bum cheek out of here as well. So everybody else visiting could see me arse, and everybody else could see me willy. And then I started crying again. And then... And I couldn't bend down to pull my trousers up because I'm plastered. I was there for about 10. Everybody behind me is laughing as well. And then in the end, the nurse came up and pulled him up. And I think it quite affected me quite badly again. Sorry, it wasn't too boring, was it?
Yes.
I've got a lot of hospitals because I'm accident prone. I've got a lot of hospitals. Do you want another hospital?
Yeah.
This one...
I think you're going to have to come back another week is what I'm going to say, because we haven't even got to new faces yet.
Oh,
so it's
going
to...
Okay.
Yeah, it's fine. No, no.
Well, I get piles quite badly.
Okay.
Right? Do you want to see? I've got I do. I was getting that age and I constipated and all that sort of malarkey, right? And, that's a nasty one, the coffee's got there. I do get them quite bad, and I phoned my doctor, and he's got Dr. Ron, he's a fantastic bloke. I said, Dr. Ron, I think I've got piles. He said, oh, my friend, he said, he's very, very well-spoken, Dr. Ron. And my friend, just get some frozen peas and sit on them. So I said, Dr. Ron, I think it's worse than that, Dr. Ron. He went, no, frozen peas will do it. I said, no, I've tried frozen peas. He went, well, do you want to come to, let me have a look then. So anyway, he said, take a photograph of it first, and send me the photo. And now I've still got the picture, do you want to see it? Do you want to see it?
Yeah.
I put. You don't have to.
No, you know, I feel as a journalist, I should.
I put a little disco filter on it as well. So. Right, there you go. Look, there it is there. Anyone in the front row want to see? You put your hands up, I'll show you. Are you putting your hand up and just... Yeah,
don't look.
Look.
You'll never be able to... you won't be able to unsee it.
This is true. So anyway, I go down... I send him the picture and he just sent back, oh, my word. Right? So I go down and see him, and he says, my friend, just lie on your side, let me have a look at that properly for you then. So I went, okay, I went, oh, yeah, this isn't good. He said, you can't just fix that with frozen peas. No, I've tried it, doctor. He said, there's a fast track. Apparently there's a fast track for it at the hospital. He said, I'll give you a note, take it to the hospital, fast track it for you, and they'll probably just nip it off for you. So, okay, so anyway, I go down to the hospital, they give me a fast track, I go in there, my doctor Ronnie's told me I have to give this letter, and they won't let me read the letter. Oh, it seems quite severe, then just come through. So anyway, I go into the doctor's, into the room, and there's a nurse and a doctor in there, so let me have a look at it, he does exactly the same thing. Take my trousers and pants off, and he has a really good look at it properly, right, and he says, okay, now you know what this is, don't you? He says, well, it's a pile. He says, yes, but it's a blood clot, basically. We have to get rid of the clot. So I went, okay. He said, there's two ways we can do this. He said, it means you have to be put into hospital, and we snip it off, or we might be able just to do a little nick incision here and then squeeze it out. It's going to be quite painful. So he said, I said, well, I don't really want to go to the hospital. I've got a gig tomorrow night. And he went, well, you should be all right. So I said, well, at least I'll try and do it now. So anyway, so I've put him in these stirrups like this. Right. It's a really slippy chair.
I'm just worried about you falling off this and going to hospital, and then having to explain you went to hospital because you're reenacting.
If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it properly, right? So, anyway, I'm like that, and he makes the incision in it. And first we inject it as well, right, with anaesthetic, local anaesthetic. Then he starts squeezing it, right? Oh, yeah. It was really bad. Anyway, while he's squeezing it, he said, I'll give it a rest because it looked a bit pained. So I went, yeah. He said, we'll come back and do another bit in a minute. So I went, okay. He goes off and starts signing things. And then the nurse comes over with a clipboard and a bit of paper. And she said, could you just sign that for me? I went, okay, is it a release form? And she went, no, it's my son, Kevin. I've got the black hole of Calcutta down here, and you've... Anyway, that was that one, love. Do you want to talk about anything else?
It's good. So so you did have some jobs before you became a comedian. That's good. You had some jobs.
Forgot about that.
So the trauma of being run out. Well, you wanted to be a geologist.
Oh, that was it. Yeah, that's what it led to. So I was going to be a geologist, but because after that, all with me leg and what have you, I missed a year of school. And it was that time when you pick all your options, you know. When I got back, they had all the decent ones that had gone, so I had to do home economics and art. And that was it. So I thought, oh, God, I can't do anything there. And so I became a civil servant.
Right.
No, I didn't. That's what I did. I was in the Department of Transport and Environment Dangerous Goods branch, and all I did was photocopy stuff, and that was it. It was really boring.
Yeah.
Then I got a job at a margarine factory. Then I was... No, and then I was...
It's quite a career move, I think.
The civil service
isn't working out for me. I'm going to the margarine factory.
But then I went to Ford's at Dagenham, started spot welding on Mark IV Cortinas.
Yeah.
And then I just hated it off. I can't do any of these till I'm 65. And then I got a job at Smithfield to Meat Market. Yeah. The job was called a humper. And it was. I used to hump the meat, basically. Basically, what you'd have to do is they had a boning room round there, so we'd have these great. It was at Smithfield to Meat Market. So great big refrigerated lorries come in with loads of what they're called pistola. Now, do you know what pistola is?
No.
You know, in the film Rocky, and he's in that meat market and he's punching those big half a cows. Do you know what I mean? That he's big train and he's punching those dead cows. Well, that's what a pistola is. Basically, it's the front of a bull quarter, and then we've got all the ribs hanging down the side, which would be about £250. And you'd have to lift them up, put your head. You know, there'd be all these hooks in the back of the lorry. You have to put your arm over the shin of the beef, and then you put the shoulder of the beef in your shoulder, and then you'd lift it off there and then try and drag it off, and then you'd take it around the Beppy Wade, and then you'd take it around the boning room. And I was only, I was about 17, 18 at the time, I was only about £100 myself, really skinny little thing, and these things were twice my weight, and invariably I'd always drop them on the floor. It was horrendous. And if you dropped it, the rule was, if you dropped it, you used to like to pick it up, nobody else pick it up for you. And I remember that sometimes it would just literally completely flatten me. So I got it round, got it, dragged it around to where the bony room was. I had to put it on this hook. And then I'd have to lift it up and put it on another hook where it'd be weighed. But it was so slippery. And then the boss of the company would be there. He'd be checking the weight of it all. And he'd keep saying, just put it up. Come on, you wanker, put it up there. And I couldn't do it. And my hand slipped off the beef like that. And that part of my hand punched him right in the eye. And it knocked him out, right? And he went down like a pistola. He was straight down. He went down for about a minute, and when he came to, he just got up and he went out, and he didn't say nothing. Everybody was laughing at first until I knocked him out. And then he came back and just gave me wages for that week. He said, you've got to go, that's it. And I got the sack for that. But what I loved about it, well, my mum loved it, because I used to get a chicken at the end of the week and a big lump of beef. When I say lump of beef, it wasn't a bit of steak. It was like that. And it was great. And I used to have a fizzy, a Yamaha FS1E. It was a moped, right? It was great. I'd drive up the A13. On a Friday, I'd have my chicken in one bag and I'd have my beef in the other bag on the handlebars like that. And I'd be balanced like that down the A13. And I remember, and it was unplucked as well. The chicken was all, it had his legs, beaks, head, everything. It had the feathers on it. And I'd be like that. And one day, and I was trying to be balanced. It was pouring with rain. And somebody's windmiller had caught my chicken bag and knocked it off. I'm like, oh, shit, I lost my chicken. My mum's going to go up the wall. And so all I had was the beef on that side. It was overbalancing me like that. And everybody's, oh, no, I'm going to fall off with a 40-pound of beef on the side. And my mum's going to kill me. Anyway, everybody's bibbing me up down the A13. And when I got home, it'd fallen out the bag and it stuck on the mudguard. Right? And it looked like road a lot had been chased by a chicken all the way down the A13. So when I got home, my mum said, that's right, we just cut that bit off. But it smelt of petrol when we had it on Sunday. It was horrible. So after that, then I got a job at a holiday. I got divorced. I got married about 17.
Right.
I had three kids by the time I was 20.
Bloody hell.
And then I got divorced about 2 years later. It didn't really work out. I can't remember why, but it didn't. But I learned how to fiddle the electric meter. Did you ever do that?
I saw you, go and tell us about that.
Well, it's not a lot to it. It was Bakelite. It just heat up a little needle over a candle and then push it in, right, and it melted it. And then you just get a hair clip, put that in, and it stopped the wheel going round. It was brilliant.
Right.
So that was one of the things I learned then. But he said that. And then I thought, I can't do this till I'm 65, fiddling the electric meter. So I've got a job at holiday camp calling bingo and refereeing wrestling.
Yeah.
no, no, I really did. And then, but part of the job, you had to do the whisk drive, and then you also had to do the tea dance, and you had to do the swimming, also had to be a swimming guard. But I wasn't a good swimmer. I had a yellow stripe, and I couldn't even do it, get a brick in my pyjamas that you had to train for. I couldn't manage to get down. The pyjamas just seemed too heavy. It weighed me back. Anyway, so you didn't have to have a yellow stripe or nothing to be a lifeguard there. All you had to be was taller than 3'6", because that was how deep it went, right? It's fine. And it was an adults-only camp as well, so there was no kids there. It was all adults, so there's no little ones going there. There's no danger to them. And so I just sit there reading comics. And all the old people had come in, and we had a bloke come in as a regular, and he only had one eye. So, and he used to come on his own, and it was, I remember it was his left eye. And so when he walked around there, he had signs all around the edge of the pool. The first time he came in, it had a sign saying no diving. But of course it was, and it had no heavy petting, all those sort of things it had, right? But he couldn't see it, because every time he always walked that way round, and it was on his left-hand side. So, and 3'6", he was a great big tall lanky bloke. Anyway, he dives in. Oh, yeah, you know it's coming. There's a load of old ladies in there. He bangs his head on the bottom. His blood goes, all starts going red. He brings his head up, and, of course, his glass eye's come out. He's knocked it out. It looked like Plague of the Zombies, right? And so everybody is, oh, my God, and they're trying to get out of the pot, you know, and you go, oh, what's the matter? And he had a bit of concussion. He went, oh, what's the matter? I went, you've lost your eye. He went, I know I have. I haven't had it for 20 years. I went, no, no, it's come out. He went, oh, no, where is it? I said, well, it's in the pool somewhere. And so, no, it's just him there now. And he said, can you help me find it? So, well, I'll do my best. So I get in. I said, what colour is it? And he went, the same as that one, like that, right? So, okay, and it was blue, which is the same colour as the bottom of the pond, or the pool, right? So you can't, I'm looking under, but you can't see it. And every now and then you feel it, you kick it with your toe. Oh, that's it, I think I found it. Oh! And it was like playing blow football in there. Oh, like that. And he went, oh, God, no, it wasn't it. And you're finding all these blue plasters in the bottom. Oh, God knows what else you find. Eventually, I've just touched it with my toe. I've just touched it. I'm not going to kick it. I'm going to touch it. And what I've done, put my toes down really hard. I wedged it in between my big toe and the next toe. And I pulled my foot up like that, really, really gingerly like that, right? And I went out the wall. I went, is that it? If he said, no, that's not it, I don't know what would have done. Right? He went, that's it. I went, oh, fantastic. And he, I kid you not, this is what he did. He plucked it from my toes like that. And he looked at it like that. And he sucked it. And then he popped it back in his eye. And he straight in the air went, oh, that's better. And I thought, in a week's time, he's going to have a verruca right there. So after that, then I got...
You're prime minister for a while after that. You're jumping side now. What after that?
After that, then somebody bet me. All the acts used to come round, all the cabaret acts for the holiday camp, and said, well, I bet you couldn't go on New Face. I bet you should, just as a bet, they said, just go for an audition on New Faces. There was an advert in the papers. Have you got any talent? And I didn't have any. So I bet you should go and do that. So I went on. So I went to the audition and only had one joke. And the joke was I had a little guitar and a little guitar out of a big case, and then they had a musician there on the piano, and they said, have you got any dots? And I didn't know what dots were. I went, what's dots? And he went, well, it's music. So I haven't got any music. If you think of anything nice to play, you can play it. And the joke was, I'm going to sing a lovely Spanish folk song called Amush Zadu Agui. And I get the guitar out, and I go, Amush Zadu Agui in the window. That was a joke, right? So I say to the bloke, I go, lovely Spanish folk song. And he started playing all this flamenco stuff. And I just stood there for about a minute, and then I looked at him and I went, you've already got the job, I'm the one auditioning. Yeah. And then I smashed the guitar up in a temper, and these three people in front of me, the director and the producer, started laughing. And then they said, I went, what's the matter? I went, well, that's the only joke I've got, and he spoilt it for me. And they went, all right, they went, who's your manager? So I went, sorry? They went, who's your manager? I went, Mr. Lee. So I went, Mr. Lee, who's he? So he's the manager. So I said, who do you look after? I mean, he looks after everybody. So I said, what do you mean, everybody? So everybody there. So everybody where? So we're at the camp. And they went, what camp? So we're at the camp where I'm a lifeguard. What do you mean, you camp at a lifeguard? You're a lifeguard at a camp? I said, well, I do the wrestling as well. No, tell me who Mr. Lee is. Well, I just told you, he's Mr. Lee, and he's the manager. So you're confusing us. Who is he? He's Mr. Lee. So where do you work? I said, well, I work at Warner's at Coulton, strangely enough, not that far away, in Lowestoft. And they went, well, could you come do the show? So I said, well, do what, though? So just do what you did. So I haven't got an act. So they went, don't matter, just go and do that. We've got a 30-piece orchestra to do that with. And I went on, and I won it, and I didn't know what the bloody hell I was doing. And, and nothing's changed in the past 40 years, really.
Did you have some... Did Ken Dodd help you out?
Oh,
as well?
Ken Dodd was... Yeah, Ken was on the panel, Ken Dodd. And I'd seen Ken Dodd when my mum took me to see Ken Dodd when I was little. And you know, when you meet people, you meet your idols, and you think, oh, you know, they're going to be really nice. And if they're not nice, it's a bit of a shock. You go, oh, no. And Ken was wonderful. I went into makeup, and in the afternoon, you do your show. And all you had to do was two and a half minutes. And I just had a little bit of magic that I'd done. And got my head stuck in the set. That was all I did. And I had a little piece of magic where I had a bottle and a hat. I put my finger in the bottle, lifted up the hat, and the bottle disappeared, but it wasn't really. It was just me lifting it up. And I got my finger stuck in the top of the bottle, and I couldn't get it off. And then I had a rabbit in the hat, and I threw that off. Anyway, Ken had written it all down in the afternoon when you did the rehearsal. I went into makeup, and Ken came and sat next to me. And he went, oh, he said, you're that young lad that was on this afternoon. So I said, yeah. He said, can I give you a bit of advice? I went, of course you can. And he pulled out a bit of paper, and he'd written out everything I'd done, word for word. And he went, right, he said, when you do this, do that there. Don't do that there. Put that to the end because that's better than that. When you put the rabbit out of the hat, don't throw it off. Put it down your trousers. Shake your leg. It'll come out the bottom. You get an extra laugh on that. If you do all that, son, tonight, you're going to win. So I went, all right then, Mr. Dodd, thank you. And I did what he said and I won. And it was just more luck than judgment, really.
Yeah, I mean, you... Fucking hell.
is that a good fucking hell?
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
You're naturally like an extremely funny person, so I can see this. You know, but you're telling tragic stories and everyone's just creasing. You know, you say you've broken your leg and everyone laughs.
Yeah.
Is that how it's been your whole life?
Yeah, it is, and I don't, you know, it is. Every day's an accident for me.
Yeah.
It is. You know, I've had some...
I mean, it's amazing any of you's here,
yeah.
Let alone you're alive, but you're all in one piece, which I'm not. I've got two pieces, so...
I had lots of, you know, loads of things have happened. I learned to fly as well.
Well, I was going to ask you about this. So you're a trained pilot.
Yeah, I've got a pilot's
license. I mean, that doesn't seem like a good idea.
Well, that's a whole thing for me. I think I must have... I've not been diagnosed with ADHD, but I think most people with ADHD, right, if you poke them a little bit, go and do that. You go, well, I'll go and do that then, and that's what I do. So I say, go and do that. I can't do it. On my equity form, when you join equity, it says, what skills have you got? I ticked every box, right? Couldn't do nothing at all. Couldn't do anything, right? So I thought, if I get asked to do something like, can you scuba dive? Yes. Can you ride a horse? Yes. Can you fly a plane? Yes. Can you do whatever it is? I could say yes. And I've ticked everything. So if I ever get a job, never got a job regarding any of these things, right? But I thought, if I ever, I'll just learn how to do it. And then after I did I'm a Celebrity, which was 20 years ago now, I had to jump out of a plane, hang out of a helicopter. I thought, if I can jump out of a plane, I can learn to fly.
Yeah.
So
I don't think that logic, don't think that follows.
It did for me.
I know.
And then what happened was, before I did it, I got once again, I was doing some CSE tours, and I went to Cyprus. And do you ever do any CSE?
I've not done it. My friend Al does.
Yeah. Well, I love doing it. I've got some amazing experiences on that, because you go around the world and you work into all sorts of different different people, and everybody in the forces, but different stuff, from Gurkhas to junior ranks to officers and all this sort of stuff. And I was in Cyprus, which is where the Red Arrows train.
Right.
I don't know if you know this story, but I don't know if I've told this story. So the Red Arrows train out there before they do all their sorties in the summer seasons and all the beaches that they do. And they train for the first 3 or 4 months of the year, because the weather's really good over in Cyprus that time of the year. And we was doing shows over there for the UN, in actual fact, No Man's Land, all that sort of area there, because you've got the Turkish and the Cypriot side and all that sort of malarkey going on. And they said to us, does anybody here want to, we're going up for a sortie tomorrow, does anybody here want to go up in a Red Arrow tomorrow? And everybody went, no, except for me. I went, yeah, oh, bloody right, I do, yeah. Yeah, so, well, okay, well, you have to have a medical first then. So I went, okay, yeah, great, have a medical first. And I didn't tell them that the week beforehand, less than a week, before I'd got a couple of days warning, I'd had, having already listened to your audio book on kind of my ball back, yeah. So you have to excuse me telling this story then, right? I'd had a vasectomy about right. a week beforehand, less than a week, right? So the stitches were fresh, right? So anyway, they give you a briefing on what's going to happen, right? You're going to go up in the Red Arrows. You're not allowed to go up in formation because for insurance reasons, you're a civilian. So you'll be going up with the squadron leader separately. He'll be sitting above the squadron and you'll be watching them doing all their malarkey up down there. Okay, so great. So we'd already done the show the night before for the Red Arrows for all the RAF people. So they'd already seen me doing my stuff. And it's amazing to watch how they do it. And they have a metronome because you've got their headphones on and you've got the mask on and all this sort of stuff. And you've got the G suit on. And they said, right, what you're going to do, you're going to take off after the squadron's gone off and you've got to sit above it. But you've got to wear this G suit on. And it stops the pilot passing out. Excuse me if anybody knows all about this, the sucking eggs. But basically, they have these big bladders around the major muscle groups, around the calves here, around the top of the thighs, up here in the biceps, and around your chest, and also around the stomach. So if they're pulling, a loop-a-loop, and they're getting like 7 Gs on that, and it stops all the blood going to there, and because then they put the pressure, compresses all the muscles, so the blood stays in the brain, so they don't pass out. Well, anyway, I get this suit on, and then they all take off. You hear them, and they're all taking the piss out, and they're all going, oh, okay, red one, red two, red three, like, oh, God, right? And they do it with a metronome. When they put the smoke on, there's a metronome, and go tick, 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 and then the squadron goes, smoke on, like, but he did it with my voice, smoke on, like, oh God, right, so I can hear all this going on, and then the bloke that's flying me, I'm in the seat behind him, he's down there slightly lower, he said, I have to tell you, sir, that if we have an emergency, the ejector seat is below you there, there's a red handle there, you have to pull it, I will say eject, eject, eject 3 times, if I say eject 3 times, you'll pull it, if I say eject once, do not pull it, if I say eject twice, do not pull it, if I say eject 3 times, you pull it as hard as you can, because I can't pull it for you, I will be gone before you've had a chance. Okay, so if there is an emergency, we have a fire, just pull it on the third eject. So I went, okay, I've got that. Anyway, we take off and we watch it all from the oh, it's fantastic watching them all do this stuff and the barrel rolls and all that malarkey. And then after they've all gone, he said, would you like to do any manoeuvres with us today then, sir? So I went, oh yeah, I'd like that. Yeah, 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 because I like a good roller coaster. He went, well, it's slightly more intense than a roller coaster. Went, fair enough then. Anyway, I've got these bladders on everywhere, and I wear boxer shorts, right? And I didn't know, but my nads had slipped down inside the bladder, right?
Oh.
So he said, right, we're going to do the first, we're going to do the loop-a-loop, sir. I said, okay, great, 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 which is the biggest one for the G's and what have you. So, okay, so he started, just lean back and just try and breathe. Don't forget to breathe, sir. So, okay, so we're going around like that. And I can feel the bladders inflating everywhere. And then I can feel it around my ball bag here. Right? And as it's going, like, it's tightening up. And I'm starting to scream, James, can you stop there, please? Can you stop, stop? And he goes, please, sir, can you just stop screaming? Can you stop screaming in my ears? I will turn you off. So, no, don't turn me off. Just stop it, please. And he kept bloody going. And of course, he's turned me off. And I've just had a vasectomy, is what I'm saying to him, right? And he's not listening to it at all, right? Anyway, it was the worst pain I've. And anyway, we land, and I was too scared to look. And then I did, and it burst all my stitches, and it was. So I had to go and see the MO, and they sewed me back up again. So, yeah, I have definitely got a bit of ADHD in this.
That's the test.
Yeah.
That's the main test. That's why so many comedians have had that.
Well, look, you've done so. There's things I have to talk to you about.
There
are things I have to talk to you about. I have to talk to you about the episode of Doctors. Was it during lockdown this was done? So tell us about what the premise of this episode of Doctors was.
Do you ever watch Doctors?
I haven't seen this episode, but it's legendary. I did used to watch it. It's just finished, hasn't it?
It's just finished. Anybody else watch Doctors? Not that many, really, is it? Yeah. No.
They've got jobs, Joe.
Of course they have. It's on in the daytime. Well, it was the most bizarre thing in the world that the episode was some woman got obsessed by me and every person she looked at was me. So I had to play about six other people in it. But I had all these costume changes. Sometimes I was a woman, sometimes I was a bloke, and I'd walk in, it would be me every time, but everybody else would see the other actor, but every time she would have saw someone, it was me, right? And it was like I was stalking her. That was what the episode was all about. Joe Pasquale's stalking me, right? And of course, I wasn't stalking her at all, but she had some sort of mental disorder that I was stalking this lady. Anyway, it was all came out just as COVID started, just as lockdown started, and the episode went out that week. And then I was trending, Joe Pasquale's trending, just as we all got into lockdown, and my son phoned me, "Dad, oh, thank God you were, I thought you was dead because you was trending on Twitter." I said, "No, I was just on Doctors, love. Don't worry about it, it's fine." Yeah, it was the most bizarre episode ever. And that's
I mean, that's a bit more surreal than I remember Doctors
being. I just think they've run out of storylines.
So you have to go for the multiple Joe Pasquale's.
Do you think
they chose you all the way, or do you think they had...
No, I think they're better people than they
I don't know, Joe. I think you're a very good person to choose for it. But it could be anyone. But, Joe, I don't think anyone would be funnier than you.
Well, I don't know about that. But it was nice to do, you know. I like doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you've done so many different things, Joe. And some of them I wasn't aware of. You were in Garfield 2.
Garfield 2.
Playing I, Claudius, is that right?
Yeah, playing Claudius the Mouse. Yeah. Well, because of the voice, I do get offered a lot of voiceovers. I remember once I had to do a voice. It was for a pilot for a teddy bear show called Mr. Teddy in Space, I think it was called. So I'd go down to do the pilot of it, and after about an hour and a half of doing this script over and over again, the bloke said to me and the director through the glass door, he went, "Oh, Joe, could you try that game one more time with a deeper voice in a northern accent?" Right? And I went, "No." And he went, "Why not?" I said, "Well, I can't do a convincing northern accent and I haven't got a deep voice." He went, "Ah." I said, "Why don't you get somebody from up north with a deep voice?" He went, "Yeah, good idea." And I never got the job, you know. But the Garfield job came from, I was doing a nappy advert, doing a voiceover for a nappy advert. Right. And normally if you're doing voiceovers with other people, then you do what they call a drop-in, as you know, right? You just do your voice and you go home and then somebody else comes in, does their voice another time, and they drop them in together. Well, it was I think it was Pampers, and the other person doing the voice was Bob Hoskins. And so I get to the studio and they went, "Oh, okay, Joe, hang on for 10 minutes, Bob will be here soon." I went, "Bob who?" They went, "Bob Hoskins." I said, "What, is he coming?" They went, "Oh, yeah, he's coming, yeah. "Oh, great, good to meet Bob Hoskins." So I'm in the studio and I had all the lines. They had a video of two babies. One was about three and the other one was about a year old. And the one that was a year old was in a little high chair, and then the older one was pouring him a little cup of tea in a little tea set. And I had all the lines. I had to go, "Well, Mummy says if we don't eat our greens, we're not going to be big boys. So you've got to eat all your greens, we're big boys. We're going to play football with Daddy next weekend, and then we'd go to the beach." And then Bob's line was, "Hey," that's all he had to say. And then after, "Well, Mummy said if we quit here with the greens, we'd be big boys, and then we'd go play football, then we'd go down the beach, and then Bob Hoskins would have to go, "Hey," and that was all he had to do. So but Bob gets in the studio and meet him, say hello and like that, and we're both sitting opposite each other with the script in around like that, and then the director's behind the glass door, like, and he goes, "Okay, and action." So I go, "Mummy says we've got to do this, blah, 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 blah." And then Bob's just staring at me. And I was really, you know, it's Bob Hoskins. I'm like, "Oh, my God, you know, Long Good Friday, every movie's up to, oh, my God, we killed Roger Rabbit." It's all those things going from my head. And he's staring at me with that stare that Bob Hoskins had.
Yeah.
Right, and I thought he was going to stab me. I didn't know what was going on, right? He's staring at me. And then the director went, "That's your line, Bob," because he didn't come up with the, "Hey," he didn't do it. And he went, "What?" And he went, "Yeah, it was your line." He went, "Yeah, sorry about that. Can we do it again?" So, So I went, and Mummy said, "I did the whole thing again," and he's still staring at me. And then the director comes in and went, "Bob, is there a problem?" And he went, "Yeah." And he went, "What is it?" He went, "It's him." And I went, "What have I done?" He went, "It's him." So what am I doing? He went, "It's that voice." I went, "What about?" He went, "I've never heard it come out of a geezer before." So, "What do you mean?" He said, "I've heard it come out of a bird, but I've never heard that come out of a geezer." So, "Oh, right." He went, "How do you talk like that?" I said, well, I just opened my mouth and it comes out really, Bob. And he went, yeah, yeah, sorry about this, let's try it again. So anyway, they did it again, and I went, Mummy said blah, 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 and he still stared at me. He went, I'm sorry, I can't do it in front of him. I just can't do it. You're going to have to go out, son. So I actually left the studio, wow. But Bob Hoskins just went, hey, and that was all he had to do. Right? Anyway, about a year later, I get a call from my agent saying, you've just been offered a part. Says, what in? Said, in Garfield 2. So I said, really? How's that come? Said, I don't know. Bob Hoskins apparently said that you're the man for the job, and Bob got me the job on it.
Right.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? That things go around.
So bizarre, yeah. That he couldn't, like, even do it with you in the room.
Couldn't go, hey, with me there. Yeah. I was some sort of anomaly to him. I don't know.
Maybe it's because he was in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and then sometimes he thinks in the real world there are cartoons.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
So he just thinks you're one of the cartoon people. He's having a flashback.
I know.
Could be that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. Look, you've also done lots of theatre, and exciting, you've been in Spamalot. I didn't know you were in Spamalot, but that must have been amazing.
Spamalot was the best thing I'd ever done, because I grew up watching Monty Python, and my dad used to do shift work at the margarine factory, which is where I got the job there.
Yeah, and it's all nepotism, isn't
it? Oh,
baby?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Nepo baby.
Once again, the amount of margarine we get at the end of the week was amazing, right? But anyway, so I used to watch it, but only when Dad was on shift work, because he wouldn't let me. He said, oh, no, it's the devil's work. You can't watch that. And then when he got shift work, my mum would say, he's gone to work tonight. You can watch it tonight, which is great. And then we got offered the part of King Arthur in Spamalot, and Eric Idle played God. Not in real life. He was just of a video screen up there. And then he came to see it a couple of times. It was just wonderful to do those, you know, those scenes from the movie and what have you. And then to meet Eric Idle, you just, I'm in awe of people like that. And once again, you meet your idols, you think, oh, I hope they're going to be as nice. And he was just so lovely, and he was just a normal bloke, and it was great to be around for the short time I was with him.
Yeah, that's great. I haven't met Eric. I'm trying to get him on this.
Michael Palin's
done this. Absolutely. I mean, some of the Monty Python team aren't as nice, but I think those two. John Cleese and Terry Gilliam are find the world a little woke, I think, now. Maybe the nicest way of saying it. I hope to meet both of them as well. But I'd love to get Eric's in LA or wherever all the time at the moment, so it's very difficult to get hold of him. But yeah, we'd love to meet him. And also, this must have been a difficult decision to do this, but I can see why they wanted to cast you. But you were playing Frank Spencer from Some Mothers Do Have Them on stage.
Well, this actually came from doing Spamalot, strangely enough. I was doing Spamalot in the West End, and it was great because I was doing King Arthur, and it was at the Playhouse Theatre, which is just behind Charing Cross, and it's underground. It's under the old dressing rooms are underground there. This is where cabaret is now, and they've done it all out to do cabaret. But at the time, it was all the dressing rooms are deeply underground, and it's under the water line as well. So it's full of rats. The go in, and there's always rats and mice in the dressing rooms. People from the West End theatres are fantastic. They're not. They're minging, aren't they? Right? And I remember going in one day, and there was a mouse. Every time there was a toilet in my room, and there was always a mouse sitting on the toilet. I'm sure that he was just trained to have a poo in it, because every time I come in, he's just sitting on the edge like that, going, yeah, I'm shit. Anyway, I goes in, and then it was really so hot down there, and I had all these layers of cloaks on and coats. I was playing King Arthur, and there was a big fan in the corner of the room, and it wasn't working. The director came in one day, I was trying to rewire it, and I plugged it in, it blew up, and he really laughed, and I had one, it was like a cartoon. All my hair went up and singed it all, and he went, you're like Frank Spencer, like that. I went, yeah, I know. And then a little light bulb came on in his head, and he went, you ever thought of doing that? So no. He said, do you want to try? I went, are you kidding? He went, no. So he said, if I write a script, we'll have a look at it. So I went, yeah. So he wrote the script, and it was an original script based on the original series, because a lot of those series, the stuff they do from a series on TV, they put it on a stage, and it's just three or four episodes. Well, he come up with this whole new story for Frank. And it was great. And we decided very early on, through the first read-through, that you can't sustain doing an impression of Michael Crawford for 2 hours, going, doing all that. No one would buy me doing that, because it was Michael Crawford.
Yeah.
So he said, the only way this is going to work and the audience are going to buy into it is for you to be you. Don't do it as Michael Crawford. Do Frank Spencer in the 21st century. And that was the way we played it. And we said, but you've got to do the stunts. Everybody knows the stunts. So I went, all right, okay, fair enough. And once again, a bit of ADHD. You tell me what to do, I'll go and do it then. And because there was that famous one with the roller skates on the the first draft of the script had me coming on roller skates, diving through windows, and God knows what else. Anyway, we realised very early on that I was going to kill myself before it even opened. So he said, "We'll just tone down some of the stunts." And the end one was me literally falling down a flight of stairs and knocking out every banister with my nads as they come down the stairs, boom, 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 like that. So let's do it. I've had a lot of pain there anyway, so I know what that feels like. I know what to expect. But you can't, for legal reasons, we have to get a stuntman in to show you how to do it. So anyway, this stuntman comes, first day with stuntman, he comes in, and he's at the top of the stairs. Right, this is what you're going to do. So, okay, what I'm going to do. So you get there, you go turn around, you kick the top of the stamp out yourself, then you get your leg in there, and then you just let yourself go like that. So you're going to do it. He said, "Yeah, I'm going to do it in there for you now." Anyway, he does it, and he slides right down the bottom like that. And as he gets up the bottom, I can see him go, "Oh." I went, "Are you all right?" He went, "Yeah." So I said, "Did you hurt yourself?" He went, "Yeah." And he went, "You'll be all right, though." I went, "You've done it once. I've got to do it 168 times. He went, "Yeah, you'll be fine. You'll be fine." So anyway, I did it the first couple of times, and then my legs were black and blue all round here. I literally got bruised to hell on it. It was really, really bad. And there's a bit in the second half of the show, I'd have to run about with my trousers on. It got a bit farcical. And everybody, all the ladies all go, "Oh, look at his legs. Oh, look at that." So then I started to put makeup on them. And then I had to put in a cup on, all this. And then I started putting American football padding around my trousers. It just became a nightmare. And then I had to put like three pairs of pants on. And I remember once shouldn't really say this, but I'm going to come out. I'm right at the front here, being Frank Spence, in my pants like that. And I can see all these old ladies at the front going, "What's that?" Like that. And my left ball bag had fallen out. Right? And it made page three of The Sun. It was great. Okay. But, yeah, it was a lovely thing to do, though.
It's happening to you so...
don't mean my ball bag, I meant the show.
It's happening so much to you, Joe. It starts to look a little suspicious. That's what I'm saying. "Oh, has my genitals come out again? Oh! Have I got an erection? Oh, there."
"Have I got an erection?"
Oh, my goodness. I do want to ask, this is a little bit more serious, but we had your son Joe on the book podcast.
Joe.
Just I wanted to ask how everything's going with Joe Cini. He's a lovely guy. He's written an amazing book about...
He's a great kid, Joe. I don't know many people know of Joe, that we have a son called Joe. He changed his... No, he didn't change his name. He's still got the same name as me. But his name's Joe Pasquale, but because at the time when I started doing the business, I didn't expect to get anywhere, so I called him Joe, because my dad's name was Joe, and his name's Joe, and it was just easy, you hadn't got to make anything up then. So
it is easy. It's very important to make things easy when you're naming kids. That's why just make it easy as possible.
Yeah, but I think retrospectively, if I'd known that I was going to do a bit of telly, I would have killed him Kevin, or changed my name, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, that's beside the point. And then Joe's got a great talent, as you know, but he's a great singer, great actor, and he was in Hollyoaks, but he got mixed up in the drug world, as it were. He started doing coke, and he's been in rehab 3 times, and alcoholism and all that sort of malarkey. But he's been clean for 10 years, and he wears his heart on his sleeve, doesn't he?
He does.
Puts a lot of stuff on.
Well, you both do, you know, and it's interesting. I didn't realise to begin with that he was your son, I have to say, when I first saw him. And, you know, I was aware of it. He was in lots of shows. And
he was in Hollyoaks, and he did so many things on BBC and sitcoms.
Yeah.
And then... as I said, he got involved in that side of things, but he got himself clean, but he's left him with a mental health issue with depression a lot. He goes up and down a lot. And so but he wrote a book, as you said, last year called 10 Things I Hate About Myself. And he actually puts it out there, and in putting it out there, he doesn't hold anything back. He lets it all go, and he helps a lot of people with it. So I'm very proud of him to doing that. But it was 10 years of a bad time for him and for me and for the family as well, to go through. If anybody is experiencing anybody in the family with alcoholism or any sort of addiction, you know that it's not just the person, it's the fallout of everything else around it, and to try and support that person. And you don't know, because I don't drink and I never did gear, so I didn't know how to understand it at all. What do I do? You know, and the anger inside of me at the time to deal with all that. And then I had to go to therapy as well to deal with my side of it. But through it, we came out the other side. And I think as parents and as children, we all lie to our kids, right? And as kids, we lie to our parents. I remember my dad, before he went, you know, he'd been ill for many, many years, and he'd say to me, "Are you all right?" And I was going for a divorce at the time. And I'd go, "Yeah, I'm fine, Dad." And then I'd say to him, "Are you all right?" And I knew he wasn't all right. And he'd go, "Yeah, I'm okay, yeah." And because we all lie, because I don't want to put my problems onto my dad because he was ill. And he didn't want to put his problems onto me because of things I was going through with Joe and my own personal situation. But through that, Joe and myself, because of his rehab, he has to be 100% honest, with not just with me, but with everything in his life. It's the only way he can deal with what he's been through. So because of it, we have got a relationship. I don't know anybody that's got a relationship with their son the way I have, because I'll phone him up or he'll phone me up and I'll say, "How are you?" And he will, you know, be bitingly honest and tell me exactly how he is.
Yeah.
And by the same token, you have to be honest with me as well. So we have a relationship now that's stronger than ever thought we could ever have.
Yeah.
You know, I loved my dad. It was great. But I wasn't honest with him all the time any more than he was with me. But through it, he's come out the other side. And you had him on the show earlier this year. So I said to you earlier on, but I was extremely grateful that you were so understanding with him.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think he really loves you. I mean, I think a lot of it is, as most sons want to impress their dads.
Yeah.
He's very talented, and you know, and I think both of you are probably a little bit down on yourselves and don't realise how talented you are. But I think he so wants to impress you because he loves you so much as well. So, but then you know, to him, you're this big figure that he's got to live up to.
Yeah, I think it must be difficult.
So
it must be difficult growing up with a parent that's in the public eye. I think there's something that I could, I didn't understand, because for me it's just a job. As you know, what we do is still, to us, it's our job.
Yeah.
And that's it. You go home, you leave the job behind and all of that. But to grow up, and also, you know, what kids are like. Well, you know, go to school, your dad's a twat, you know, he got all of that. And then, well, yeah, I know he is, but, you know, how do you deal with that as a teenager growing through when your dad's on the telly and everybody calls him a wanker? And, it's tough then, you know, especially if you've got the same name once again. That was a hard thing, that one.
Yeah, there was no escape.
Yes, which is why when he went into business, he changed his name to Tresini, which is a long, involved story on that one. But because that way, if he goes to an audition, he stands or falls on his own merit.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, he goes to an audition room and go, "Oh, I know he's dead. I can't stand him. He's like gonk." they go, "Oh, I know he's dead. I really like him. Or he's not as funny. Or he's fun." Whatever it is they come up with, they have their own preconception on what Joe should be based on who I am. So this way, he goes into an audition room and he stands and falls on his own feet then.
Yeah, I think he's a terrific young man. I think he's, you know, he's really been through a lot.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. That book, if you haven't read it, and if anyone you know is going through that stuff, the honesty of it is.
It's hard to read as a parent to read about your kid going through it. Because as you know, you've got kids.
Yeah.
For me, Joe's still always going to be five, even though he's 35 now. For me, he would always be that kid.
Sure.
You know, but so it's hard to understand that and to deal with it in my own head.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting to hear your side of that as well. But yeah, well, give him my best.
He's a good lad. But honestly, I was so grateful that you were so understanding with him.
Yeah,
it was great.
No, of course. Let's talk about. I mean, you've done like a couple of big reality shows. So I mean, it doesn't seem like it's that long ago, but it's like basically 20 years ago since you did
20 years since I did I'm a Celebrity.
Yeah, and you won I'm a Celebrity.
Yeah, but, you know, that was a really weird thing, because for me, it was just like a crap holiday, right? It really was. But we win it, we come back, it was like being Elvis for about 3 months, right? Go, "Oh my God, people following you about." And it's just a shit holiday, really, you know, and you lose a lot of weight, and that's it. And you come back, and it was so boring as well. You only see an hour a day that make it look, "Oh, look what's going on here. He jumped out of a plane, then he started crying, then they had a big row, then he dropped that, and then then he's got a leech on his foot, and then he's done that, and then they've eaten a kangaroo's willy. What a great day." And the reality is you're sitting there watching people argue and fart all day, and that's it. Oh God, yeah, it was a really good thing to do. I really enjoyed it in a strange masochistic sort of way, but it was really quite boring existence for 3 weeks.
Yeah, I don't think I would like
I
to,
don't think it's your bag.
I don't think it's my bag. I've sort of been approached in the early stages.
Have you?
Yeah, because they like to put in all sorts of different people, don't they? But I don't think I'd do anything where I'm filmed where I'm asleep. I think that's the thing for me that I'm more than eating kangaroo's cocks. I don't like the idea of like me snoring and dribbling and then zooming in on your stupid fat face.
Yeah, they do all that. But the thing is, you get all the, because you forget you're on the telly, but you've got all these cameras in hides, but they're not really, they call them hides, but it's just a bit of, fiberglass with a bloke in there. And there's a big lens, that big there, you know. And I remember one day I was sitting there walking past and the bloke farted. The cameraman farted. I went, "You're going to say pardon then?" Right? And he went, "Oh, right, pardon." Like that. He had the right arse with me. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, as with any career, I mean, you have worked for this the last 40 or so years.
Yeah.
But that was obviously like quite a big deal. So that was a big high profile thing.
Yeah, but you don't realise it's a huge, you know, you come out of it and then you're on Parkinson. You go, what? What's this? What, I'm on Parkinson? And, you know, and I was on with Rod Stewart going, what am I doing sitting here with Rod Stewart? It was that, you know, imposter syndrome all the time. I've always suffered with that. And I was sitting there, Rod, oh, I don't know what to do in there. But it was a really weird time. Only about 3 months, and then the profile goes down, and you know, it's that. And then you get to do something like Dancing on Ice, right? Which I loved, even though I couldn't skate. They asked me, "Do you want to come and dance on ice?" Once again, I ticked it off. I can skate. Well, I couldn't, right? So you get down the very first day, and they want to assess your skills on the very first day of rehearsal. So I go down, and no skills at all. I'm still hanging on the side, shaking like that. And Karen Barbato, "Hold your hand." And they still gave me the gig. I don't know why. They gave me the gig. "Don't worry, he's crap. He won't last long. Just get him in and out quick." Anyway, I go on, and they get 6 weeks training before the first show. And they've tried to give me a lift. Where, you know, you've got to lift your partner up, okay. And it's called the pencil lift. So you get, like, she's going backwards, you're going forwards, and you get by the hip there, and then that leg, you pick her up there like that, and then after about 5-6 weeks training, you have to do what's called show and tell. And Christopher Dean and Jane Torval and all the producers are there, and everybody goes out on the ice and they show you their routine that you've been working on. Well, I dropped this poor cow on her head straight away, right? And honestly, I thought I'd killed her. I did. I went, "Oh no. Anyway, they said, "Right, you've got to practice that for 2 hours now. Just practice. Did it, and they still wouldn't want the lift in. So anyway, I did the lift. I lasted 6 weeks. I don't know how I lasted 6 weeks, but I did. But on the back of it, you get to do the live tour, which is what everybody wants. Everyone wants a live tour. Live on tour with Torval and Dean, you know, 20, 30,000 people at the very big arenas. It was fantastic, right? And then what would happen? You'd have to do your routine, and Chris and Jane were hosting it as well, right? And so that you'd have to do your, and it was the same thing every single night. You do exactly the same routine, same order, and the audience would vote, little buttons, all that sort of stuff. And then after you'd done your routine, you'd go up to the little platform and Chris and Jane would interview you. And they said to us before we started, make sure that when Chris asks you the question, make sure that whatever answer you give him that first night, you stick with that answer all the way through the show, through the whole tour of the next 28 days, because Chris isn't a great ad-libber, right? So people go... They would say to people, "Well, how would that go for you tonight?" "Oh, Chris, it was great. I felt wonderful. I felt the air through my hair, and it was wonderful when he lifted me up." And that would be, okay, so the next night people do that. So I'd come out, and I'd go, "Well, how was that for you tonight, Joe?" "Well, tonight, I was a little bit rusty tonight." "Why is that, Joe?" "Well, I didn't have my merkin on." "Merkin? What's a merkin?" "Oh, well, I just felt it was a bit merkinless, and I got a bit cold down the southerly region." Right? So he thought, so the next, "Oh, well, no, it is." But, right? So the next night I'd come out, and go, "Okay, Joe, how was that for you tonight?" Expecting me to talk about merkins. I went, "Well, to be honest, Chris, I'm okay, but I forgot to wear any pants tonight, so what I'm doing, I'm feeling a bit cold around the southerly region tonight." And he just stared at me. He didn't know what to do. He had no idea how to react to somebody saying something different to him, right? So at the end of each night, he would come round the dressing room and he'd say to everybody, okay, everybody would stand in a line like that in the dressing room, say, okay, ice bath tonight, ice bath tonight, would you like an ice bath tonight, ice bath, ice bath. He'd get to me and he'd go, ice bath, ice bath, ice bath. I go, what about me? He went, what about you? So can I have an ice bath? He goes, oh, no, you don't work hard enough. So what do you mean don't work? Well, no. It's only for the proper sports people. Oh, right, OK. So, of course, this goes on every night. Ice bath, ice bath, ice bath. After about 3 weeks, he goes, ice bath, and by now, right, he comes back, he went, do you like an ice bath tonight? I went, yes, and everybody cheered. I went, yes, yes, an ice bath, right? So he said, right, well, make sure you wear your pants. I don't want you naked. So, well, Chris, I'm not going to go naked. Why would I do that? So, well, don't. Said, well, where is it? It's round in the. This was at Wembley, right? Like 20,000 people. They're not in the ice bath, obviously. Right? So anyway, I'll make sure I've got my dressing gown, I've got my slippers, and I've got my pants, and I pull them up really tight, as high as I can, right? And I go round there, and I didn't know what to expect, right? It was like something out of Caligula. It was amazing, right? They've got this huge inflatable swimming pool. Everybody's sitting in there, and it's just a giant swimming pool full of ice. Right. But they're all drinking champagne, having canopies, right? Like that. Well, the bloody hell, I've missed this for the past 3 weeks. Every night you're doing this. Anyway, I came past them, and they had all the sugar in the shower room. All the shower heads are there. And Chrissy said, well, just get in then. Just get in. Get in. And all drinking champagne. And as I do that, I slip, because I'm accident prone. I slip. And I bash the button that turns the shower on, right? And it goes on Chrissy. Oh, it's cold. It's cold. I went, you're in fucking ice. What's the matter with you? So I save the champagne, save the champagne. So I put the champagne down there. Right, and so he said, right, just get in and be quiet. Just get in, treat me like I was five, which is understandable, right? I said, just get in, and when you get in, just slide in. Slide in, don't make waves. So, all right, get in there. So anyway, I get in, and the physio always said to us, right, for energy, make sure you have a Barocca before every show, right? Well, I always had two. I had the raspberry ones, right? Anyway, I get in, I slide in like this, right? And as I'm getting in, because I'm a certain age, right, I dribble a little bit, right? So the coldness hit my bladder, right? The ice hit my bladder. And I couldn't stop the wee. It just came out, right? Bear in mind, you've got everybody off the telly, all the pros there, and it came out like the Red Arrows, like this, right? Because the Barocca, right? And you know that scene in Jaws where everybody's trying to get out of the water when the sharks come? And Krista and Jane Torvers going, he's pissing! He's pissing! And everybody got out. I had the bottle of champagne and the canapes to myself, and they never asked me again. And that was it.
Oh, Joe. Look, we could talk to you all night, but unfortunately, we can't because we've run out of time. But that's the, we've done, I can't believe
that's nearly an hour.
I know. Believe
it. 5 minutes. So I was talking about my pie. It was 5 minutes ago.
It does feel like it. It's been an easy show for me.
Please.
So thank
Sorry,
you for that.
Did I talk too much?
No, it's brilliant.
Do you want to ask me any emergency questions or not?
I'll ask you one emergency question. Just one. I know you're interested in the paranormal, so have you ever seen a ghost?
Oh, I can't believe that. I was hoping you was going to do this human centipede.
Oh,
but
you can do that as well.
Can we do that after?
We'll do the human centipede.
Yeah, because I had thought about that one.
Okay.
And I thought quite hard about
that. Have you? Okay, well, we'll do...
But ghost-wise, I've not seen a ghost, but I contacted one once. I was because I was in the Cubs.
Yeah.
I don't get this. I was in the Cubs, right? Well, I joined. And me and my mate Kevin Bloss, he was great. We used to do Bobber Job Week. Do you remember Bobber Job? Was you in the Cubs?
Yeah.
So imagine Bobber Job Week. It was like 1969 then, right? Imagine I was in my little shorts and had my knee-length socks on, with little epaulets down the side there, and my little cap on like that, and my woggle and everything, and a little neckerchief. And knocking on people's door, I go, and I was only like 8 or 9, and knocking on people's door, and he go, have you got any jobs? It's Bobber Job Week, right? Now, imagine that now. You couldn't imagine sending an 8-year-old around someone's door. Have you got any jobs? So, but we did. And invariably, somebody used to say to me, oh, can we wash the car? Can we do this? And they'd give you a shilling. That's all it was. And he'd go to the charity and then mend the roof on the scout or whatever it was going to do. And this bloke said, oh, yeah, we've got a load of rubbish that needs in the garage. You want to dump the rubbish for us? Anyway, me and my mate Kev, we were going to dump it all. We found a Ouija board there. And we was both into a little bit into paranormal stuff at the time. And we took it back to the scout. We dumped it, and we kept the Ouija board. And we told all the other scouts, me, Pete Richardson, Kevin Bloss, and Andrew Mason, that was it. And we all go into a cubicle in the toilets, right? Just we all bunched into a cubicle, right? And I was the one setting up, because it was me setting it all up. I sat on the toilet like that, and they come in and we wedged the door shut like that. And then, of course, I've got the Ouija board on here, and we're going to contact a ghost at the scatter. And so we go, oh, okay, is anybody there? And of course, it went, yes. Like, oh, shit, right, there's someone here. And they went, what is your name, right? And he went, Malcolm, it's spelled out Malcolm, right? I went, are you dead? And he went, yes. I said, how did you die, right? And he said, I knew it, somebody had to be pushing it, right? Because he said, in the toilet, like that, right? Right. And everybody, they all screamed, right? And they're all getting out, and I couldn't get out the door because they're all trying to get out, and they're all climbing under the door, and there's things like that. And I was left there with this Ouija board on the toilet, crying again on my own. So that was the closest I got to a ghost,
that's
I think.
Well, that's pretty good. That counts. Yeah. What about the human centipede? You're in the middle. You can choose who's at either end.
Yeah, the reason I wanted to ask, because Joe made me watch that film.
Okay.
Right? So I know what it is, right?
Yeah.
I know. Dad's got a great film for you to watch, because he knows I love horror. So we sat and watched it together, and to say I was bilious is an understatement, right? And so I went, He said, there's two more. I went, I don't want to sit down. I don't want to see any more of those. He went, no, you've got to watch, Dad. I can't, no. I only watched one. So I did think about it, because I thought, I wonder what emergency question Richard's going to ask me.
Yeah.
And I thought, I did have that one prepared, yeah. Which is basically my sister at the front.
Okay.
Right? Because she's really nice and she doesn't eat anything at all. Okay. And so that'd be fine. And then,
her ass is connected to your mouth, though.
Yeah,
okay, no, fine.
That's
right.
It sounds a bit weird, but, you know, I'll be honest.
I know you're from the East Anglia, so it's fine.
Yeah, that's very true. My sister, but it has to be my sister Lorraine, not Julie.
Obviously.
I won't tell you why, but trust me. You don't want Julie up front, okay? And she does live in Lowestoft, you know. Right? And down the other end, I think it would have to be, who's in The Bitch and The Stud?
Joan Collins.
Joan Collins, yeah, Joan Collins. Not because of bad reasons, because I just think, because I used to fancy, remember the film The Bitch and The Stud?
I didn't ever see it because I was a little bit younger than you, I know of its reputation.
13, it was great, I loved those films at that age. It was fantastic. And then, but I always think now, she still looks exactly the same as she did then.
Yeah.
I don't know if she had work done or makeup.
She's 90 years old now, I think. So you've got your sister at the front and a 90-year-old woman behind you. And you elected to reveal this. I didn't even ask you.
But I actually think...
Yeah.
And you've seen it, right?
Yeah.
You've seen it. It's in the proof. I actually think that's probably false teeth.
Yeah.
And I actually... Because, it hangs out like a dummy, right? And I actually think she'd probably get off to sleep on my pile every night.
Yeah.
That's what I actually think. On my little hemorrhoid. It would help her doze off. That's what I actually think. It meant... That's what I think. You can't follow that, can you?
You can't. I did not expect the podcast to end with Joan Collins draining your cyst with the false teeth. That was not on my bingo card for Joe Pasquale. But that's what I thought would happen. I thought it would be unpredictable tonight, but even that was something else. Look, Joe, it's been an absolute pleasure to me. what a fantastic career, and it's just such an honour to talk to you. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for the amazing Joe Pasquale! Thank you very much. We'll see you again, I hope. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Joe Pasquale. Thank you to Scant Regard for doing the music. Thank you to everyone who knows me. I'm indebted to Chris Evans, not that one, and Ben Evans, his son, and George and Beck, and everyone at the Norwich Playhouse. It's been 4 weeks we've been here. It feels like a lifetime. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
the podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.